The Torah in this week's the Parsha, in the third Aliyah, presents a sequence of three Parshiyos, all of which involve Avodah Zarah in some form. First, the Navi who claims that God has told them to command us to worship Avodah Zarah. The second, of the Mesis, who attempts to persuade an individual acquaintance to worship Avodah Zarah. And finally, the Parsha of Ir HaNidachas, where at least the majority of the community has been corrupted under the influence of Anashim B'nei Belial. These parshiyos are not merely about Avodah Zarah, but about Avodah Zarah performed through instigation. In each case, the instigating party says, Nelecha, ostensibly joining in the worship. But in none of these cases is it necessary, at least according to Chazal, for the instigator to perform Avodah Zarah. And only in the last case, the Ir HaNidachas, is it necessary for Avodah Zarah to actually be worshipped. In effect, the sin being discussed here is the one of instigation, not of Avodah Zarah per se. And it's worth noting that Chazal did not understand the Navi for Avodah Zarah only as one who was encouraging us to abandon Judaism, but rather it also entails a Navi who merely advocates for a temporary suspension of the mitzvah of Avodah Zarah, as opposed to this temporary suspension of another mitzvah, in which case, if a Navi is already established as a Navi Emes, like Eliyahu on Har HaKarmel, we listen to temporarily uproot any mitzvah except Avodah Zarah. The Aveira of a Navi of Avodah Zarah, then, is primarily one of advocacy, or misleading, or better said, distorting Torah, as opposed to wholesale abandonment. What is the Torah's message here in the sequence of these three parashas? In particular, what is the connection between the first two, which merely entail advocacy, to the third, which entails the wholesale spiritual corruption of a society? Let us step back for a moment, considering the first parsha, that of Navi Sheker. What is the role of a Navi Sheker in society? Let us step back further. What is the role of a Navi Emes? In popular parlance, a Navi is one who predicts the future, whether it be future historical events or miracles and signs which come to pass. And indeed, if one is looking for proof that a given individual is a prophet, that may be necessary. But if you read the works of the classic Nevi'im, that is the books of Nevi'im Achronim, you discover that the primary role of a Navi is to give Musar, to rebuke a society for its shortcomings in the arena of Torah and Derech Eretz. The Gemara in the first parak in Baba Basra tells us, V'yom shecharba chara beis hamikdash, nitna nevuam and anevim, v'nitna l'shotim u'latinokos. From the day the beis hamikdash was destroyed, prophecy was taken away from the prophets, and it was given to the insane and the children. What does that mean? In his famous work, Night, the late Elie Wiesel tells the following story when they were being transported to the camps in the cattle cars. Mrs. Schachter had lost her mind. On the first day of the journey, she had already begun to moan. She kept asking why she had been separated from her family. Later, her sobs and screams became hysterical. On the third night, as we were sleeping, some of us sitting, huddled against each other, some of us standing, a piercing cry broke the silence. Fire! I see a fire! I see a fire! There was a moment of panic. Who had screamed? It was Mrs. Schachter. Standing in the middle of the car, in the faint light filtering through the windows, she looked like a withered tree in a field of wheat. She was howling, pointing through the window. Look! Look at this fire! This terrible fire! Have mercy on me! Some pressed against the bars to see. There was nothing. Only the darkness of night. And then there is the story of the emperor's new clothing. Everybody oohs and ahs at the emperor's new clothing. Only the young child blurts out, the emperor has no clothes. The common denominator of these two stories are that all of the clear-eyed, sane adults are simply unable to see or to acknowledge the truth. As adults, we are masters of self-delusion, of seeing what we want to see, of trying to fit in and to go with the flow of those around us. But the katan and the shota feel no social compulsion to go along. They simply blurt out the truth as they see it, which in many cases should be obvious to all around them. In the same way, the primary role of the Navi is to look at the society with clear eyes and to tell a community or society what is wrong. Hence, he is not only called a Navi, which refers to Borei Niv Sfasayim, speech, but also a Ro'eh, or a Chozeh, a seer. The role of the Navi Sheker is to obscure. That of the Navi Emes is to shine a light in the darkness. The Navi Sheker proclaims, Shalom, Shalom, all is well. Whereas the Navi Emes proclaims, Ein Shalom. The Navi Sheker is there to comfort the comfortable in their affliction of the afflicted, and to reassure all that everything is well. The Navi Emes has the job of comforting the afflicted and afflicting the comfortable. Very recently, Brett Stevens, one of the few conservative columnists of the New York Times, published an interview, not in the Times, but I think he has some website. I think it's up here. He published an interview with Michael Sandel, a noted political philosopher from Harvard, about Sandel's view on the issue of meritocracy. In short, meritocracy is the notion that given an equal starting point, and to their credit, many advocates of meritocracy recognize that we fail to do this as a society for so many who are less fortunate. But they believe that given an equal start, people who get ahead in our society do so because they work harder than others, and those who fall behind do so because they are not willing to work hard. In other words, outcomes reflect the merits of the individual. Or put differently, we strive for equal opportunity, not equal outcomes. Sandel says, I quote, when we speak of merit as a value, we're making a strong claim. We're saying that insofar as chances are equal, the winners deserve their winnings. This is the assumption we need to reconsider. The principle of equality of opportunity is important. No one should be held back because of poverty or prejudice. I think this is the principle, Brett, that you rightly care about. But it is important to recognize that the equality of opportunity is a remedial ideal. It is not a sufficient condition for a just society. Meritocracy, understood as a principle of deservingness, has a dark side. It corrodes the common good. It teaches those who land on top that their success is their own doing and the measure of their merit, and by implication that those who struggle must deserve their fate too. This feature of meritocracy, the attitude towards success that it cultivates, leads to hubris among the winners and to humiliation and resentment among those left behind. He continues, we need to educate the successful to notice the luck and good fortune that helped them on their way and to appreciate their indebtedness. This recognition can prompt a certain humility, the ability to look at those who struggle and say, there but for the grace of God or the accident of fate go I. That could be me. But the part that struck me most about the interview was the last exchange. Note that Brett Stevens is Jewish, and Sandel grew up with a conservative Jewish upbringing. Stevens asked, what do you think that Jewish education has to offer this conversation? Sandel responded, Jewish education at its best can prompt a spirit of critical inquiry, interpretive debate, and humility. It can cultivate an appreciation of the possibility that we are not self-made and self-sufficient, despite what a market-driven meritocratic culture teaches us. So much of our public culture, especially among the privileged ranks of our society, teaches us that we are self-made and self-sufficient, that everything we achieve is our own doing. Engaging with Jewish texts, Talmudic debates, and biblical stories can induce a certain humility. It can recall a covenantal idea of community, belonging, and obligation, an idea that exceeds our will, our doing, our mastery, and our dominion over the world, and our fate. When I read this, I was thinking, gee, where have I heard this before? And the answer is, on numerous occasions in Sefer Dvarim. I say this not to criticize, but to note that both the interviewer and the interviewed seem to have missed the point, or perhaps just didn't address it, that this approach is probably the most central theme in Moshe Rabbeinu's farewell speech. He shamer lecha pen tishkachas Hashem Elokecha, pen tochal v'savata, v'rom levavecha, v'shachachas Hashem Elokecha, hamotziacha me'eretz Mitzrayim mibeis ha'adim, v'amartot levavecha, kolchi v'yotzim yadi asali esachai lazeh. Success breeds arrogance, belief in oneself as the primary agent. And as Moshe Rabbeinu warns us over and over and over again in Sefer Dvarim, and we read it twice a day in Kriyashma, financial success breeds arrogance, that's avodah zarah. This is nothing short of idolatry. That many of the wealthy and powerful in our society, like the economic system, as currently constructed, should come as no surprise. Ein kol chadash tachas hashamesh. But for many controlling the system and tilting it in their favor, that's not sufficient. They also need to provide the just-so story so that all can understand why they are right, why the outcome is just. And they do that by creating institutes and foundations and buying the intellectuals who will produce the position papers and opinion pieces to support the world as it exists. But I am not coming to address those intellectuals. I may disagree with them and marvel at the convenient, well-funded self-justification, but I have not the hubris to claim that I know better on my own. They have opinions and I have opinions as to what a just society should look like. Mine derive from Torah. Most of them do not subscribe to my Torah, so our differences don't come as any surprise. Fundamentally speaking, Torah Jews subscribe to a different system of values. I get it. But I do believe that scorn should be heaped upon the Nevi'ei Sheker. That is, the orthodox, or claiming to be orthodox, intellectuals who look at our society with its economic system, forgive me, predatory capitalism. Disruptor is a sanitized term for predatory, with winner takes all and ever widening inequality, and assert that this is consistent with Torah values. They are bought and paid for, literally, by the wealthy and powerful. If you wish to eat chazer, go ahead, but please don't try to put the stamp of the Vada Kashrus on it. This nevuas sheker can take one of two forms. First, it can consist of outright distortions of the Torah's views, as I just described, but it can also come in the form of critiquing the flaws in our society, justifiably so, and joining forces with one or the other end of the political spectrum, left or right, without acknowledging that a significant part of each side's view is antithetical to Torah. If your movement advocates for social justice in the economic and racial sense, but fails to note that the left's views on sexuality and gender issues, which incidentally seem to take up a disproportionate amount of airtime, despite affecting a relatively smaller part of the population compared to the issue of economic struggles, which affects a very large part of the population, please note that the former affects the wealthy also, the latter not so much. But if you fail to note that the left's view on sexuality and gender issues is categorically antithetical to Torah, you are presenting a distorted view of Torah. And if you condemn the attitudes towards sexuality and gender issues and other related traditional issues, but fail to note the incompatibility with the Torah's vision of economically just society, or even worse, you hold up this iteration of capitalism as a Torah value, you are no less guilty of distorting Torah. It's as if there's no ribbis, there's no shmita, there's no yovel, or you have blinders on about Choshen Mishpat and its underlying values. The Torah in this week's parasha provides us with a sequence of events. You begin with Avodah Zarah, which is preached publicly, where a few people, the Nevi'ei Sheker, broach an idea that is antithetical to Torah, and they make it acceptable in the public dialogue. The Torah teaches us to nip that issue in the bud. If we fail to do that, we reach the next step, where those ideas have invaded the minds of individuals who become the connectors and spreaders of those ideas. The Torah says that we have an obligation to not accept these masisim so as to prevent these ideas from spreading and becoming normalized. If we fail to do that, we wind up with the corruption of a society, an ir hanidachas, which has rotted from within and for which redemption is impossible, like the original Arei Hanidachas, Sodom and Amorah. And this is the result not of the powerful, but rather it begins with their enablers, the Nevi'ei Sheker. These Nevi'ei Sheker are sometimes in the category of what we would call Amaretz Daraisa Drabanam, complete ignoramuses. But sometimes they are people who should know better, but for one reason or another, be it for personal pecuniary gain, or on rare occasion, L'shem Shamayim, driven by something in their life experience which has led them to distort the Torah's message. Our response to this, the Torah tells us, needs to be quite clear. We are bidden to lo silve elav, lo sishma elav. We should not listen or like these people. Their distortions should be called out because it is nothing less than an attempt to be madichacha me'al Hashem Elokecha hamotziacha me'eretz Mitzrayim mi'beis avadim. Good Shabbos.